Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
It stops being personal and it starts becoming about, well, help me achieve this purpose. Of course, I'm going to want to learn and I'm going to want to know where I might be off base if I'm really clear and committed to what I'm ultimately trying to achieve.
Hey, it's David, and you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show. Here, episode, what are we at? 247, I think, or somewhere in there. Tanya, you wouldn't know the answer to that, but I'm going to look at it. Yeah,
247. But I'm impressed that you're in that vicinity, so.
There we go, yes. Episode 15, season 15, episode 6 of season 15, which is 247 overall. So coming up on 250. And listeners, season 15 is going to be a little bit shorter than you're accustomed to because we are getting ready to start season 16, celebrating the launch of our new book and giving you all kinds of practical tools to help with your workplace conflict. But that's not what we're talking about today. Today, we're talking about building better teams, leadership, power, and squirrels with our guest, Tanya Luna, who is the author of Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power and Build a Better Team. Tanya's an entrepreneur, psychology researcher, and writer, has founded and grown multiple companies, including Scarlet Spark, a nonprofit that creates human-friendly workplaces for organizations that help animals, and Life Labs Learning, a leadership development company. Her other books include The Leader Lab, How to Become a Great Manager Faster, and Surprise, Embrace the Unpredictable and Engineer the Unexpected. She's also the co-host of the podcast Talk Psych to Me, love that name, and a TED speaker on the power of perspective. Across her work, Tanya strives to incorporate interconnectedness among all living beings, humans included. She lives in a micro sanctuary of rescued pigs, goats, dogs, roosters, cats, and the love of her life. And I got to mention those goats because we have goats in our next book. Again, not talking about our next book. We're talking about your book, Tanya.
Do it. It's your podcast.
Squirrels. We've got squirrels here. So Tanya Luna, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. So glad.
Thank you so much. I feel like I've come to the right place.
We're going to have fun. Listeners, you can already tell we are going to have fun today. And we're going to learn something along the way. So Tanya, I can't wait to dive into the book. But before we do, can you take us back to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader? And you can take us back however far you want to go. What's your earliest memory?
Yeah, I guess I'll start with kind of an embarrassing story, but maybe it gives you access or insight into who I am. So in elementary school, there was a group of boys that started something they called the Power Boys Club, but it was based on like the Power Rangers. I grew up in the early 90s and girls weren't allowed. So I started the Power Girls Club. And that, you know, is kind of, I would say, admirable, but then it all went downhill from there because my control freak side really came out and I put up all of these barriers to access to get to become part of this club, was a total, you know, just top down command and control leader, which is the opposite of what I stand for now. And then I went to a Hallmark store that I don't know if they're around anymore, and I printed everyone a membership certificate. So to be part of the club, you needed to show your certificate.
Your intentions were good. You're trying to equalize the playing field.
Execution, you know.
But we have to start. We have to start somewhere. I can share all the same stories, all of those things I did as a leader. Now that I look back and go, oh wow.
Yeah, you know. I guess it was good that I started early so that I could, you know, work out the kinks in my leadership philosophy. Definitely started off on the command control, and I'm very much in the share power school of thought now.
Absolutely. And now listen, we're, you know, 3 or 5, 10 years from now, we're going to be look back to today and go, hey, or at least I hope we will look back at today and go, oh, wow, I wish I would have known that. Well, I know it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's if you really shift into thinking of leadership as a practice and as a muscle that you're continuing to build, then it feels good to look back and feel a little bit embarrassed. Because if you're not a little bit embarrassed by your past self, then you're probably not growing as much as you could be.
And own it. And you don't even need to have shame or embarrassment around it, right? It's like, you know, okay, I learned. I've grown since. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, the book is called Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power and Build a Better Team. And clearly you love animals. And for readers of the book, you need to know this going in, you love puns. And that comes through in this book. Like, I'm just going to share one. It's the only one I'm going to share. To please don't criticize any of Tanya's puns, right? So
you got it.
Yeah. There we go. So now we know the playing field we're in.
Yeah. So readers beware. You'll get a lot of philosophy, a lot of psychology, but grounded in a story about a business squirrel who is branch manager. And I didn't even know how much I like puns until I started writing this book, and there they are.
they almost write themselves at a certain point when you
put them in my last company, Life Labs Learning, one of our employees actually designated Fridays as pun days. So every Friday we all had to pun, basically. I mean, it was very much optional, but people would just kind of out pun each other. And I guess my pun skills developed as a result.
Thank you,
Robin, if you're listening.
my brother, if you're listening, my brother and law and I, back when we lived in the same place and see each other regularly, yeah, there frequently be those days where you just go back and forth on a topic and, you know, seeing who could have the last pun.
But, you know, I mean, I had a semi-serious reason to go in this playful direction too. One is that the topic of power, people tend to feel very uncomfortable around. And so I wanted to bring a playful spirit to make the topic more accessible and something that, you know, let's talk about this. Let's not pretend that it's not there, and let's make it easier to talk about. And as you mentioned, my background's in psychology, and I'm just so taken by the research that shows that we learn better through story. And so I wanted to, yes, have the philosophy, have the psychology, have the really practical tips and tools, but take, especially these days, we're like all so tired. So I wanted to make it just a little bit easier, more fun to follow along on this journey of Sam, the branch manager, to collect those practical tools.
We're not going to criticize. In fact, far from it. So on a serious note, you know, as you say, you want to make this accessible and fun and engaging. And it really is. This is, listeners, this is a beautifully written, engaging, sympathetic book, and you're going to level up your leadership along the way. It's very well done, Tanya. So congratulations on a very well written book. So Sam is a squirrel. We've mentioned that already. So the protagonist, the hero of our story is Sam, and Sam is a squirrel who is got KPIs that he's got to meet, like TNG, which is total nuts gathered. I'm going to be a little nutty by the end of this, I'm sure.
I know, right?
Right. So we've got TNG is up by 20%, and but Sam has some challenges. Things are going south for Sam. So again, as we're getting into the story, if you're one of our analytic listeners going, I don't know about these stories and these leadership fable. Listen, it is easy to do leadership story, leadership fable badly. There are so many of them. I don't feature them on this show. So this is really well written. I encourage you to check it out. All right. So Tanya, tell us about Sam. Tell us about the challenges that he's encountering, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe I can parallel track Sam's squirrel journey with my own human one. So in Sam's case, as you mentioned, his nut gathering quota is really high. At the same time, as he's trying to prove himself as a leader because he wants to be promoted to be chief nut officer. Sorry, I'll stop there.
Don't need to.
there is, he finds out that there's a forest recession happening because of a condo development that's going up. So just as pressure is rising, both with his boss and with his team and even with his family, all of a sudden there's more and more scarcity and danger and risk. And so his approach, I suppose very much like mine was when I was a little kid, and also as an adult at times, is to clamp down and try for more control, try for more, you know, either threats or promises of rewards. So he's telling his team, you know, to put more effort in, to he's trying to kind of either threaten them with taking away benefits or bribe them with giving bigger bonuses. And of course, it's having the exact opposite effect. So just when you need engagement to go up, productivity to go up, all of that is slumping. The squirrels are moving out into the city, that kind of thing. And the human component or parallel of this was very much inspired by my own experience in 2020 during the pandemic. I would say since my elementary school days, I was already much more collaborative as a leader. But 2020, you know, at the time we had about 100 employees with my, in my company, and about, I would say, 1500 clients. So feeling pretty good, growing very quickly, really diversified, you know, portfolio of where our revenues were coming from. So I went from feeling really safe, really optimistic to all of a sudden the pandemic hits and we did leadership development, right? That's, that wasn't on the list of must-haves in that first month of the pandemic. So we started losing massive amounts of business and the money that we were owed all of a sudden just wasn't coming because companies were doing these massive layoffs or just really terrified about what was going to happen. And when I went to other leaders for advice, the most common advice I got was command and control. You know, you have to, all of a sudden I heard all these military terms, right? Like you have to get the troops to fall in line, set a crystal clear vision and get everyone to, you know, follow your marching orders, things like that. Again, we did manager training, nothing military, but the advice that I was getting was so control driven. Luckily, I went in a very, very different direction of actually doubling down on there's a lot of uncertainty. So let me lean into that and actually share the decision-making authority, involve as many people as possible in our strategy, in our innovation attempts. And by the end of 2020, it ended up being our best year yet, both in terms of revenues and profits, in terms of our brand reputation. Two people left that year. No, three people left. Two of them came back the following year. So it was also just this wonderful time for our team. Our engagement scores were 96 out of 100%. And I truly credit that to the decision to go in the opposite direction of what Sam was pushed into, the let's have more control, let's give people less information, and into let's share power, let's really co-create the solution.
And particularly in those kinds of moments, there's no playbook. No one has those answers. So to act as if you do is just a little nuts. And yeah. I say that apart in recognizing, yes, squirrels, but I would have said that anyway, because that's the way I talk. So yeah, but that just doesn't make sense, does it?
We had a coworker that said, this is my first pandemic. And for some reason that was so honest and delightful that we said it like once a week. We just kept reminding ourselves, remember, this is our first pandemic. Hopefully that will stay funny.
Right. Yeah.
But that you're right. You know, there was something really powerful about embracing the fact that these are uncharted waters. It doesn't mean you throw away everything. You can still look back and say, well, what are the tools that we can at least try using, gather some data for your analytically minded listeners? I am too, by the way. There's a lot of experimenting, a lot of measurement so that we could learn very, very quickly. But that only happens when you accept the fact that what worked before is not likely to work again.
Why wouldn't you want a whole set of brains and parallel processing, everybody trying to solve, as opposed to just it all falling on you?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I saw the 2020 and, you know, since then I just see this massive uptick in manager and leader burnout. That's what we did at Life Labs Learning. We did manager training. In my time there, we trained probably about 300,000 managers around the world. So it was this amazing education in, you know, seeing what is it that great managers do differently, where do managers struggle, but also how are they feeling? And it was probably 2020 that we saw this just huge uptick in managers taking the world on their shoulders. Executives as well, but I think it particularly fell on managers because you're sort of in this weird space of having just enough power to feel a sense of responsibility, but not enough power to really feel like you can make decisions on your own. And a lot of that came from this acceptance of the belief that it should be lonely at the top, that it's normal for it to be lonely at the top, that heavy is the crown and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I've really inspired me to write Lead Together is that that doesn't have to be true. Leadership does not have to be lonely. It could be an incredibly collaborative and beautiful experience of coming together and something new really being born out of that.
Yeah. And it's an incredibly hopeful, optimistic, inspiring sense that you get going through the book. So again, the book is Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power and Build a Better Team. Written, the author is our guest today, Tanya Luna. And Tanya, you talk a lot about power through the book. It's a theme throughout the book: too little power, too much power, formal and informal, power over versus power with. Talk to us a little bit, set the stage for power. Then I really want to drill down into some of these principles and how we work out some of these things in our leadership.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, I appreciate that you're starting with that because so many of us use the word power or think about power without really defining it. The definition that I really find most helpful is power is the capacity to get things done. Power is the capacity to get things done. So that's all it is. You know, it's not something dirty. It's not something to be kind of secretive about. If you want to achieve a goal, you're going to need power. But then it gets really interesting as you think about power dynamics. So as you mentioned, one of the things that I write about in the book is some of the research as done with humans, but told through squirrels. It's like the opposite of what usually happens. Usually research is done on other animals and then we try to apply it to humans. But anyway, so there's some really fascinating research on power that shows that when we feel a sense of powerlessness or not enough power, stress levels tend to go up. Even illness can go up. Our immune systems are impacted by that. Creativity plummets. People are much more likely to be withdrawn at work. Engagement goes down. Right? So if you walk into those rooms and you're like, why am I the only one talking? Or why is no one else, you know, demonstrating a sense of ownership or taking risks? Very likely it's because there isn't enough of a feeling of power. On the flip side, what research shows is that if you have too much power, that also isn't great. So for most of us, when we have too much power in a situation, our decision-making suffers. We tend to assume that we have really good ideas. We tend to take more risks. We tend to overtalk. We tend to interrupt others. A lot of these things where, you know, again, you're looking at a dynamic in the workplace and you're going, that person's a jerk. Are they? Or is that potentially they just have too much power baked into their role? So ideally, if we want to, again, power is the capacity to get things done. If we want to achieve great things as a team, we need to have that really healthy relationship with power, not too much and not too little. And so practically, that means you're looking around your team or your organization, you're going, how can I increase individuals' power? So maybe that's their knowledge, maybe that's their authority, maybe that's just their context. Like, do they understand the history of why we're doing what we're doing? So one is growing power. And the second is distributing power. How do I make sure that no one, myself included, has too much power? For example, instead of being the single decision maker on, let's say, a hiring decision, let's have two decision makers and a tiebreaker. Or instead of, you know, one person having, you know, all of the information about the strategy, how do we make sure that that is transparently shared with everyone so that we all have the same context? So it's growing individual power and then distributing so it's never too concentrated in any one person or group.
I'm intrigued on the idea. You know, I readily, you know, wrap my head around too little power. And I think many of us listening have experienced that or can visualize that. The notion of having too much power. Too much ability. So again, if our definition is the capacity to get things done, I have too much capacity to get things done. What you're really talking about, it sounds like there's almost a lack of checks and balances. Yeah. And so that's where you get yourself into the trouble of I'm making decisions, I'm doing things, but I'm starting to lose context for them.
Yes, you're starting to lose context and you're starting to lose perspective. Because, you know, it's almost like I love that you're going back to that definition of the capacity to get things done. I picture having too much power. It's like you're this train that's just barreling down the tracks and you've got tunnel vision. You're just looking at what's right ahead of you. You're losing perspective around, well, what might be around the corner, or who did I just pass, or what's around me. And so it's power is the ability to get things done, but we want to get those things done well and thoughtfully and with an understanding of what impact it's having on others. So yes, checks and balances is a really beautiful way to say it. And, you know, if you're in the US or another democratic country, you're probably already bought into this idea of it's really valuable to have checks and balances. And yet in the workplace, I so often hear people say things like, well, it's not a democracy, you know, or, well, you know, it's my business, so I get to decide. Saying that something's not a democracy, I get where it's coming from. The idea is the leader has the vision or the business owner has the vision. But if you want that vision to be as fruitful and as successful as possible, then it's worth it to still implement those checks on your own power so that the decision is better and so that the people that are part of that journey are more likely to want to stick around and put in that effort that's going to allow you to achieve great results.
All right. So there's our exploration of power at a treetop level. Sorry. Yeah. These are unintentional. Unintentional.
So you get sucked into the vortex. If you read this book, you're just going to be doing squirrel puns and no one will know why.
I literally talk that way though. So listeners, you know, you've heard me use these expressions before. All right. Yeah. So at a treetop level, we've our exploration of power. So again, the name of the book, Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power, Build a Better Team. Author, our guest today, Tanya Luna. And so Sam goes on this journey, learning some principles about power with, as opposed to power over. So having power with. So describe a little bit the scene that Sam finds himself in as he learns these. And I want to call out a couple of these principles that we can explore together as well.
Yeah. So Sam is, you know, he's trying these kind of command and control top down approaches to leadership. It's not working. It's backfiring. And so he basically does what so many of us do when we're frustrated with our teams is we go, well, I'm just going to do it myself. And so he decides his team is supposed to be gathering these acorns. He decides he's going to do it all on his own. He's going to go into the forest, gather so many acorns that he'll become kind of the town hero. And he goes into the forest, goes farther and farther in, only to discover what his team could have told him if he'd asked, which is that there are not enough acorns to go around. So he gets terribly lost. And like many of us get lost sometimes in our leadership journey. And he bumps into my favorite squirrel in the book, Mary Parker Forrest. And she's inspired by this incredible philosopher, thinker, who wrote in the 1800s, early 1900s, named Mary Parker Follett. She has actually shaped so much of modern leadership, but very rarely gets credit for it. So that's her concept, the concept of power over versus power with. Power over is the idea of you're using your power to control others. So very much top down. Power with, I'm using my power to grow the power of others so that our collective capacity to get things done increases. So he bumps into the squirrel who says, you know, I can help you out tonight. I can show you where you can hide for the night, or I can show you my community where we have acorns for everyone for free. And so he's like, okay, let me follow you to this community. And so he meets a whole bunch of just very strange characters who show him a different option for how he could lead. And so along the way, he meets, you know, these squirrel scientists that get to teach him about the psychology of power. And he gets to see these different businesses and how they operate in this shared power capacity. So that's what brings us to the principles that you're bringing up.
Absolutely. All right. So let's dive into these. So four of them to talk about today here. So the principles of power with, the first is following a purpose, not a person. And this one immediately makes sense. And I'm curious from a leadership perspective, how we implement it. So let's explore what is this follow a purpose, not a person. And then how do we implement that as leaders?
Yeah. It's interesting that you said that one immediately makes sense. That's the part of the book where my mom stopped reading. I was like, she was one of my early readers. I said, like, could you read this? And she was like, yeah, you lost me at that. That sounds like communism. I'm from Ukraine originally. And so my mom's like, no more communism. And this is, just to be clear, not a communist book.
At all.
But I really lost her there because she said, what do you mean don't follow a person? Of course you follow a person. Here's what I meant with that principle and why I think it's incredibly important. Ideally, as leaders, we're not leading in such a way that people are looking to us and saying, let me try to guess what's going to make you happy. Let me try to please you. Let me try to avoid you being upset with me. That's really not the way to get results. Ideally, what we're doing is we're together looking at what is our bigger purpose? What are we trying to achieve? Mary Parker Follett described purpose as the invisible leader. It's the one that we're all ideally following. And so as a manager, as a leader, ideally, I'm not saying do this thing because I want you to, do this thing because it'll make me happy or it'll impress me. I'm saying, let me be a coach, a supporter for all of us to try to figure out how to achieve that purpose. The purpose is the boss, and we're all reporting to that purpose. So that's the idea. You know, the opposite of that is teams where, for example, the leader's never challenged on anything. No one ever gives the leader feedback. You know, and there's some terrible case studies, for example, in medicine, where people with less power don't speak up and challenge the clinician who ends up prescribing medications. And there's a version of this that's in the book that are lethal or that are harmful to people just because we're following the purpose, the person, just because we're following the person and, you know, kind of diminishing the importance of the purpose. Does that make sense before I go into sort of what it looks like in practice? Yeah,
it does, because the purpose is, you know, and I can see where your mom might be coming from, because like, you know, it's back to the type of power you're talking about, right? Of if we have blind devotion to a cause, that right. can also become the train barreling down the tracks without a check and balance. But if we're together working towards a common purpose and we really hold ourselves accountable for that, it becomes a check for all of us about, hey, does this help us accomplish this outcome, this bigger picture? What is it? And from a leadership perspective, I always say, you know, that leadership is that belief that together we can do something more than what we can do on our own. We can have a better tomorrow. So what is that better tomorrow?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's beautiful. And I like that you describe it as a check. I think it's the guiding star. You know, when I'm following a person instead of a purpose, that person's out sick or out on vacation, I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting around scared to make decisions on my own, scared to make progress, you know, constantly checking in with small questions because I don't understand how to guide my own action. So on the one hand, that purpose becomes the guide. And on the other hand, like you said, it's the check. So it's us, you know, like, you know, recently I was making a decision at my workplace and one of my coworkers was like, wait, but does that align with our objectives? That's exactly the kind of thing that you want people to be saying, right? There's that mm-hmm. constant checking and the constant guiding. So what does that look like in practice? A really simple thing that so many teams and organizations miss is just helping people understand what is the purpose of their role. So often I'm just given, you know, a set of tasks to do. Yeah. And then as a manager, I might get frustrated. Oh, why isn't this person being strategic? Or why is this person, you know, not showing initiative? Well, it's like wandering around in the dark. If I don't know what direction I'm heading in and why, it's really hard for me to move in a thoughtful, strategic, proactive way. So, you know, again, very simple and practical is help people understand what is the purpose of their role. If you want to go further, how can you help people self-measure whether they're on track for achieving that purpose? So often, the way that performance assessment happens in an organization is I'm taking action and I have no idea if I'm doing a good or bad job until someone comes and tells me, until someone comes and evaluates me. Well, can you give people that power themselves to be able to assess, am I moving closer and closer toward that purpose? So that's a small example. Another example might be to
let's just pause before we run through that. That small example is huge. What if we just did that? What if everyone listening, if you just equipped every person on your team to be able to self-evaluate their own progress, their own success, and empower people that way with that information of purpose and company measurement? I mean, how huge is that?
Yeah, you could literally just do that and then you'd be ahead of the game. And, you know, you don't have to read any of the other chapters. So, yeah, because that takes care of a lot of things. You know, if I understand the purpose of my role and how it's evaluated, it also not only does it help me be more proactive and make better decisions, it also reduces likelihood of bias, for example, within the organization. So if everyone's just evaluated differently, it also improves the quality of my collaboration and communication with others, because now I'm self-advocating for the resources and information I need to be able to make better progress. It creates more alignment and clarity organization-wide, because now I'm like, oh, I understand what the goals are and why they matter. So yeah, it unlocks a lot of good stuff within the organization. Thank you for pausing me there.
Absolutely. When I'm thinking about from a leadership management perspective, then the conversations you're having, if there is a mismatch or somebody is missing something on it, you've got, they've done their own thinking, you're able to pull it together and look, and then, okay, now it improves the quality of the conversations that you're having. Yes.
And then to the help feedback people grow. That people are receiving doesn't become about the person. It mm-hmm. stops being personal and it starts becoming about, well, help me achieve this purpose. Of course, I'm going to want to learn and I'm going to want to know where I might be off base if I'm really clear and committed to what I'm ultimately trying to achieve. If that's blurry, then you see more defensiveness, then you see more confusion, you see more conflict, because people are kind of butting heads over ego instead of, again, that alignment around what we're trying to achieve and why.
Fantastic. All right. So you were starting to share another one when I...
Oh, I guess I'll keep it quick. Just taking a look at, okay, the purpose is clear. How do we make sure that the person doesn't loom too large? So tiny things that organizations or teams can do to make leaders more accessible. For example, the larger an organization gets, the less often you see people who have a lot of power and authority, the scarier they become, the harder it is to just go, yes, I'm going to focus on the purpose and ignore, you know, this individual who's freaking me out because they have so much power. So little things like, can you do virtual office hours for people who have a lot of authority within the organization so that they're more accessible? Can you take a look and see, you know, are you holding everyone to the same standards? Is anyone above the law accidentally? I worked in one organization where the person who had the most authority decided how many vacation days she was going to have, whereas everyone else was, you know, sticking to whatever their allotment was. She was sort of above the law, and that erodes that sense of, you know, connection and cohesion and sense of fairness across the organization. You know, do you need fancy parking spots if anyone still has those for people with certain titles? And even like little things, you know, this isn't as I guess unique anymore, but when I first got into organizational psychology, you could tell how important, in quotes, someone was based on how big their office was or how far they sat from the rest of the group. And so thinking about, how do you make sure that, you know, as you're looking from a distance, you can't really tell who has more authority within the organization. You really are creating this sense of, we're in this together. It doesn't mean that some people can't have more authority or more power than others, but ideally you're doing some work to remove that sense of status or intimidation that can come from power, so that I can serve as a check for these individuals and come to them with ideas, with suggestions, with concerns.
Excellent. All right. And those are all outworkings of following a purpose, not a person. Now, we have some more, and I'm looking at the time going, I don't think we're going to get through all these, so you're going to have to read this book.
One or two of your favorites.
Exactly. I've got definitely one more for sure, and then I'm going to skip down to some application pieces that I know some of the listeners will be saying, okay, I get that. And Tanya Luna is our guest. The book is Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power, and Build a Better Team. Again, you're going to want to check this book out and get all of these principles. So the second principle is relying on context, not control. And the idea here is that we're not going to go with a bunch of rules. Mm. And we're going to do something else. So, and you say, like, before you make a decision, there's some things that you can think about and think through. So what does relying on context, not control look like?
Yeah. So you can do a really mini version of relying on context, not control, which could be just as simple as getting in the habit of saying, here's why, or here's the context, or here's the backstory. I so often see people do things like, we're making this change, everyone stick to this change, instead of, we're making this change, here's how we made this change, here's why we made this change, here's why we're asking you to make the change. Right? So just making sure that anytime you're using your authority as a means of control, you step back and say, where can I share more context so that people can really understand the reason behind the rule? So that's kind of the mini version that all of us can do on a regular basis. If you want the kind of more extreme or, you know, all in version of this, is it's really looking at where do we have rules where we can just scrap them and allow people to use their common sense or their reasoning instead. So for example, you know, one of our clients at my last organization, Netflix, they're kind of famous for getting rid of almost all employee policies. So instead of having a dress code, they'll say things like, use your best judgment. Instead of having a budget that people have to stick to, they say, you know, treat this money as though it were your own money. You might need to give more information, right? So for example, at my organization, we don't have Netflix money. We don't even have Netflix like rounding error money. So we have to say, you know, after we've reached 50% of our budget, then we'll check in with each other. Before then, we'll make our own best decisions. So just taking a look at where are we creating constraints? Where are we creating bureaucracy? Where it's actually no longer serving us. Oftentimes these rules emerge because one person makes one mistake and then HR or the leadership or whoever is like, that can never happen again. So how do we make sure that someone has to sign this three times before the decision is ever made? More often than not, that creates more problems than just every once in a while, someone making a bad decision. And so, you know, really leaning into where can we give people freedom to use their judgment to very, very quickly make decisions without having to check in with anyone, and accept that sometimes mistakes will come of that, but that those mistakes are worth it. And in fact, sometimes they're a feature versus a bug, because as a result of those mistakes, we can give feedback, we can learn, we can grow. So many organizations prevent learning and growing from happening by constantly trying to prevent those mistakes. And then they are frustrated because they're like, why am I the only one who's good at this thing? Or why am I the only one who's making, you know, sound decisions? Well, it's because you've eliminated the ability for people to experiment and play around with making those decisions on their own.
And your ability to make those sound decisions came from somewhere too. So
yeah,
like we were saying earlier, the decisions we make now are different than the decisions we made 20, 30, 40 years ago. Yeah.
And sometimes what was a really good decision for a long time and what made total sense, as the world around us changes, that decision is no longer valid. And so actually having people have the authority to challenge those decisions and to make new types of decisions, even if we as experts think that they're the wrong ones, oftentimes that is the thing that's going to save us, because what worked in the past might no longer be relevant for this new context.
Gives us and the whole team a chance to grow. You know, and that when you talk about this rely on context, not control principle, one of the ways that you lay it out in the book is you say, you know, for example, before you make a decision, one, understand the context. So do what you can to understand the context. Two, use your best judgment. And then number three, and this one I think is back to the power with and the critical aspect, is ask for feedback. Yeah. So it's not a vacuum that is happening in the give and take of community, of the people we're making decisions with, the impact on them, on the customer, on the finances, whatever it might be. And so we're getting that feedback. It's built into the process. And if we don't do that part, we actually still are not doing the full power with.
Yes, that's such a great point. And oftentimes when people hear, you know, what I'm proposing, they assume that I mean consensus driven leadership. I do not mean that. But I also don't mean I have a decision, I want to do it, and I don't talk to anyone about it, and I'm just going to barrel through those tracks and do it on my own. It's really that beautiful balance of, you know, I have the authority to make decisions, and also others have the authority to give me feedback, to potentially use veto power to stop my decision if they think that it might be really risky. But yeah, it's really that balance of, we want the speed and the freedom to decide with the checks of feedback, of input, of, you know, other people's contributions.
Which I think gets to one of the next questions I want to ask. And before I do, I just want to mention the other two principles. We're not going to have time to dive into in more depth. Be a cultivator, not a collector. Give us the one sentence on that. Be a cultivator, not a collector.
Yeah. So that's all about shifting away from this belief that there are these perfect people that exist that we just need to recruit or, you know, promote into a role, and instead thinking about talent as this infinite field that we can grow. So power is the capacity to get things done. So many of us try to get things done just by using these like finite resources of individuals. How can we consistently reduce barriers to access and expand that field of knowledge, of skill, of power? That was a long sentence.
No, no problem. Our guest last week, CEO, and she was talking a lot about her approach to talent and the same kind of a thing about how you identify. There's not these perfect, like I'm looking at the resume. She's like, a lot of times I don't even read the resume. I want to know about this aspect, and it's their capacity to grow and go and move and go forward and that ability to grow. All right, let's take us to number four, build a community, not a crowd. What are we talking about there?
Yeah, the mini version that I would describe there is to shift away from trying to get buy-in for your business, for your ideas, for your plan, right? Buy-in is I'm going to make it and then I'm going to try to sell it to others. And instead, you want to shift into build-in. How do I get people to co-create this thing with me? So a crowd is just a bunch of people that are like independently getting things done. A community is we've truly come together to co-create something together. And as a result, that thing is stronger. But also what research shows is that we feel significantly more attachment to something that we have made ourselves. So how can you really let people add their fingerprints, like add their DNA to whatever it is that you're building? It's kind of the secret to leading change is don't try to change people, get people to come up with the plan. And then the change tends to be something that people are actually excited about and contributing to.
Excellent. All right. So those are our principles. And again, I encourage you to get this book to dive in more depth into all of them, but especially number three and four there. Okay. So Tanya, the final question I want to ask you well, maybe next to final question. We'll see how much time we have here.
I'll speak in shorter sentences.
Oh, no, you're doing great. I just am full of curiosity. I want all the answers. The messy middle. So as I was reading the book and I'm like, okay, let's apply this. And I'm thinking through how, you know, the principles of empowerment, the principles of providing context and make the best decision. I really envision it and get it in smaller organizations. And then as I multiply up to organizations that have hundreds or thousands of people or tens of thousands of people across multiple geographies and time zones and everything else, which many of our listeners are in those kinds of situations. And, you know, I mean, it's matrixed organization where I've got to get, you know, three different people aligned to get anything done. And like, it feels so much the opposite sometimes of what you're describing. Yeah. I'm curious how you recommend leaders maintain organization flow, the different pieces of a complex organization working together. And you have some insights in that, that Sam learns through his journey.
Yeah. Well, I think two thoughts come to mind. Tell me if this is, you know, kind of the direction that you're going and exploring this. One is just anticipating that there will be some mess involved. I often see people go in this direction of trying to share more power, and then it gets uncomfortable or mistakes happen, and then they pull back and go, well, that didn't work. Let's forget about that. And just recognizing we're going to need to create some space for trying stuff and then giving each other feedback and actually really building it in. So the fastest improving and evolving organizations I've studied are the ones that have the shortest increments of try stuff, and then let's pause, debrief, talk about how that went, and then try some more stuff. So really thinking like a scientist, thinking like you're running a whole lot of experiments, and some of them are going to work, some of them are not going to work, having that point of let's come back, let's debrief, do a retrospective, and then let's try again. So that's one insight, regardless of the size of your organization. The larger you are, the more coordinated those pause points, in my experience, have to be. That wasn't a squirrel pun. Points to pause. where you go, okay, we're going to schedule this once every other week, or we're going to schedule this once a month, and we're going to have these retrospectives. The other thing that can be really helpful in a larger organization is, for example, things like if you already have a practice of doing one-on-ones between managers and direct reports, building in a part of the one-on-one template where you use that as a point of, let's align on purpose. Let's give each other feedback. Let's see if there's any context that's missing here. So really building it into the system to nudge those learning points to happen. So that's one point that was coming to mind. The other thing that I would say, though, is this doesn't all have to happen all at once. And it doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to happen all at once. And it doesn't have to happen everywhere all at once. So some of the larger organizations I've worked with, they're in the thousands or tens of thousands of people, they'll often start with a more contained pilot experiment. Sometimes without anyone even knowing that that pilot is happening, it's happening in stealth mode. They test it out and then they go to other teams and they kind of positively infect them. And they go, well, we're doing this thing. Do you want to try it with us? And then once they've had some success, maybe they go to, you know, the executive team or HR or whatever the org structure is, and they say, this has worked really well. Can we give this a try and see what happens? Yeah. Does that get to where, what your question was? Cause I can take that in lots of different directions and I don't want to make the messy middle too messy.
No, absolutely. No. And I think that that understanding that as you implement these principles, especially if they haven't been the way that the organization has operated prior to this, is it's going to take some time and it's going to be messy, and that's okay. As you empower people and get the real power with going, is that you're going to learn along the way. So I love what you're saying about building in the learning moments and making that a continual quick part. So it's back to the ask for feedback part. We're okay, we just did this, let's get feedback. And I love even in the one-on-one that you're talking about, that's the manager asking their team member, hey, let's get some feedback on how'd that feel? How'd that work? What would have been better?
The stuff that I'm talking about, it feels like, you know, on a large scale, it is, it's radically different from what we see in most organizations. But on a small scale, just pausing to go, are we aligned on what the purpose of your role is? Or let's set some metrics that we're both agreeing to. Or, you know, can you give me feedback? I'm the leader here, but I really need your feedback. Like, those are not, you know, there's not going to be like a squeal of brakes and people, you know, the music shutting off and people being like, what are you doing? Why are you sharing your power? It's these things that people are already naturally hungry for. You know, it's clarity. It's feeling that my voice matters. So you can also start on this like very micro level and build and build and build as people's power grows. Because the more capacity I have, the more skills I have, the more willing and able I will be to use more power as it is granted to me.
Excellent. All right. Well, our guest today has been Tanya Luna. The book is Lead Together, Stop Squirreling Away Power and Build a Better Team. Tanya, where do you recommend people go to check out the book, get connected with you, any resources you might have for us? Tell us where to find all the good things that are squirreled away.
Yeah, well, they are not squirreled away. They are out in the open. Probably the simplest would be to check out my website, tanyaluna.com. It is frustratingly spelled T-A-N-I-A-L-U-N-A. I believe I might also have the T-A-N-Y-A version redirecting there. So just go ahead and find any tanyaluna.com. There is a section on the website with free resources that will allow you to take an assessment to see where is your team or organization in terms of that kind of power with continuum, as well as a whole bunch of other tools and templates that allow you to start peppering in these shared power principles. And of course, you can read the book, Lead Together. It's the one with squirrels on the cover.
Yeah, you can't miss it. So as we're talking about sharing power with, getting out of those power over modes, making sure we don't have too little power, that people aren't having too much power, all those sorts of things. For listeners who are, you know, obviously we want them to read the book. That's a first step. And as you're thinking about people who are really wanting to undertake this and really go there, as an individual team leader, and regardless of what kind of organization I might be in, what is a starting point, a place that you really recommend a leader can start to say, you know what? Yeah, this is a way to start implementing power with. It's one of the very first things you'd recommend.
Yeah, I would say it's really hard to implement power with in a power over way. So it could be tempting to be like, I'm going to show up to work and I'm going to make everyone share power. So, you know, the messy and potentially unsatisfying, but trust me, much more effective approach here is to bring your team into this. And to, for example, you could look at the assessments that are on my website and have folks go through it together and then just say, all right, here's a really practical way to do it. You could say, everyone share one idea for how we can get started. What is a change that we want to make in the next 30 days? Then you do a clarifying round where everyone goes around and asks questions. You get rid of duplicates and then you just vote. And you can see which of these suggestions do we want to start implementing? And you implement it for 30 days or maybe a quarter, depending on the pace of your organization. And then you pause and you reflect and you say, how did that go? Okay, what's the next thing we're going to do? So just chipping away at it little by little by little. You do not have to transform everything all at once.
Tanya, you throw out so many of these quick, like, oh, they just do this little thing.
I know, I'm making everything sound smaller.
And there's so much value in it. Even that, like, hey, let's vote as a team and let's see what we want to do and try it for 30 days. It's not a forever. We're giving it a trial. We're giving it a test. And what a great way to test out ideas, to try different things, and then get the feedback in, see how it went, evaluate, and do it again and again and again. And it's iterative. And now we've got everybody thinking and everybody owning.
It also allows you to just commit. Oftentimes I see organizations go, oh, let's try this thing. Oh, I don't know. Is that working? Is it not working? And so when you give yourself that container of let's do this for 30 days, the moments where you're going, I don't know, is this not working? That's also useful feedback. That's useful data. And so instead of pulling back on that decision or unraveling a decision, you stay committed to it because you know there will come a time where we're going to pause and take a look at the data and debrief. And then, you know, as you said, try again and then try again. And it's so much more fun that way. And the growing and the learning just happens very quickly and in a very exhilarating way.
Excellent. Well, listeners, we are out of time. Tanya, thank you so much for all of the squirrel-based and human-based and well-researched wisdom that you shared with us today. It's really helpful. And listeners, I can't encourage you enough, check out the book. And as you are seeking to implement your power with, start small, bring your team in, get feedback, and grow together. Yeah. Tanya, thank you.
Thank you. And I can't wait to read your book and find out what all this goat mentioned.
All right, we'll leave on that cliffhanger. We'll end the show there and find out about the goats, the squirrels, but start with Sam. Go follow Sam and his journey and take your journey with him. Tanya, thank you so much. And listeners, pick up one of these principles: follow a purpose, not a person; rely on context, not control; be a cultivator, not a collector; build a community, not a crowd; and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.